the Pattern Podcast. Make left traffic, clear for the option.
Minneapolis departure, Archer 641, Charlie 2000, climbing 3000.
Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 Mike Alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo Hotel, hold short on 133, ready to take off.
Alpha Delta, 3321, Mike, enemy downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Welcome to episode 39 of the In the Pattern Podcast. Good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, whatever the case may be. Thanks for listening. Hey, this is Chris, and we've got a great show for you. We've got a few things to catch up on. We've got a lot of new things, some flights, some air shows, and all kinds of stuff to get to. I've got Brad and John with me this evening. How are you guys doing?
Hey, not bad, not bad.
I can't complain. Weather is here, and wish you were beautiful.
Nice. Yeah, summer has started to rear its ugly head here in the land of the sun. It's 90 degrees every day now and just getting warmer. So
that's gross.
Yeah. I don't know how hot it was today, 90-ish somewhere around here, and I'm like, this is like full-on summer for most people, and this is just like the postcard from summer letting us know, I'm on my way, I'll be there shortly, and it's going to only get worse.
Yeah, so we finally hit, 70 degrees here. It's nice. We can go out in t-shirts and shorts, and it's, spring is here.
Nice.
We get that season.
Yeah, this is the warmest it's been. This week is the warmest it's been in 6 months, and a week ago today, we got 9 inches of snow.
Man, I can't complain. We have had the mildest winter and just a beautiful spring. Like, a matter of fact, winter was just basically, I'm going to just say, like 5 months of spring is basically what it turned out to be.
All right, so I'm moving on with the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
saying goodbye to Chris.
I'm going to try not to complain when it hits 115, 120 in the next couple of months. So you can keep me honest to that one.
Oh, we will.
All right. Well, hey, we got a crap load of stuff to get covering, and I wanted to shoot it on over to John first. John's been lucky enough to represent us and be on down there to the sun and fun, as it were, and we're kind of excited to hear what's going on down there. How'd that go for you, John?
It went really well. It was a great week. Fantastic start of the air show season, and great to see everybody, see all my friends, all the aviation friends I only get to see a couple times a year. And on top of that, I got to watch some airplanes, some pointy-nosed airplanes, and some really, really loud radials. So, I can't complain.
That doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, it really isn't. I mean, there's nothing like waking up to a pack of T6s called Aeroshell going for their takeoff run.
I'll take that for my alarm clock any day.
Oh, yeah, it's a great alarm clock. Sure beats the annoying buzzing that I get in the morning. But
you should set up one of those engines in your apartment.
I should. We'll see how my wife thinks about that.
So you camped on site?
Yeah, I camped with the Camp Radioactive. It's the social media volunteer, Sun & Fun Radio volunteer campsite thing. Huge props, actually, to Mike Daniels and Elizabeth Daniels. They were down there. Got to see them again. I hadn't seen them in a couple years. And they were there with their camper. They're kind of living on the road now in their camper.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Larry was there with you over street?
Yeah, so Larry was down there. Mike Ladd was down there. They had the three RVs set up in this nice U, so we had a little common area to hang out with. And then just across the road, there was a little area where we had all the tents kind of set up. So great campsite. We had a whole bunch of people there. You know, Robert Sigliano was there. Got to see Tracy and her husband, who actually exist, Tracy and Ben Marks. She keeps talking about him, but nobody's ever actually met him until this week.
It was a stage.
Yeah, yeah. But actually, it was great meeting him. He's a riot. He's funny. A lot of fun to hang out with. And honestly, for somebody who doesn't know a whole lot about airplanes, you know, he's not a pilot. He's not into this whole thing. I tell you what, most of the time you couldn't tell when he talked, because he knew enough of the technical stuff, from Tracy to pass as being somebody who knew what he was talking about. And then every once in a while he'd say something, you're like, wait a minute. But
it's rubbing off, huh?
Yeah, it was rubbing off a little bit. It was cool hanging out with them, seeing them again. We already mentioned Larry and his wife were there. I'm trying to think who else. There's a whole bunch of people. Met a bunch of people from Sun and Fun Radio who were hanging out there.
Is David in your camp, or is he off-site?
David.
Alan?
Yes. Yeah, he was in the tent next to me. David Allen was there. I don't even know. There's so many people. It's kind of amazing how large this group has grown of people on social media, people in podcasts, people that just at air shows that you see all the time. It just kind of boggles my mind how many people there are and how many friends that I now have in the aviation community, you know, going to these air shows. So it's just, you know, it's always nice to go and see everybody and hang out and just have a good time, you know, hangar chat, see airplanes and just kind of just have fun. And, overall it was a fantastic week. Got to see the Blue Angels again, which was great. Second time I'd actually seen them, and actually the first time I'd seen them from kind of, you know, the show line. The only other time I'd seen them was in Baltimore, and I was underneath them in a boat. So it was kind of cool to see it from where the crowd line normally is.
I haven't seen them in years. I see the
Thunderbirds?
Thunderbirds, yeah, the F-16. But they don't excite me too much because I see F-16s every single day going back and forth to Luke. Maybe not four of them in a diamond formation, but I do see 16s all the time, so it'd be fun to see something different.
Yeah, I've actually never seen the Thunderbirds. So I'm really excited they're coming to Osh and are actually going to do something at Osh and not just media rides and be there for presence. They're talking about actually doing some kind of show.
Cool.
Wow.
We'll see what that ends up being. I know they're still kind of working out the details, but I'm very excited about that. This is the one show that never, ever gets old to me. I don't know why. You know, some of the other guys, you know, they're great pilots and all that. These air show performers. But, you know, you see them a couple times and you're like, all right, I've seen that before. And, you know, some of them, they kind of blend together. But the Aeroshell team with their T-6s, there's something about that that it just never gets old for me. Just never. I can listen to them and I can watch them just constantly. And it never gets old. I don't know what it is. It's something about that T-6. I love a T-6. And,
I love the sound of it as it's doing its loops and stuff, and you get this low noise and then this high-pitched noise that's coming through, and the radials are spinning up a little faster. I love that noise, too.
Yeah, and then you get the little sonic booms coming off the end of the propeller because they're going supersonic.
Yeah.
It's something about it that's really cool. And then you get four of them together, and just the whine of all four in this diamond formation doing a loop. It's just, I love it.
They did their night air show, too, right?
They do. I missed the night air show this year. I was bummed, but... it was Saturday night, and I had to leave Saturday morning. Mm.
So that's one of my favorite things too at Osh is that night air show with them. They really make it for me.
Well, you know, you got the air show guys who can single handedly make an entire airport IFR in about 2 minutes,
right?
And then you got Yunkin,
yeah,
with his BH-18. You know, I love the BH-18. And I get to see one on floats at the Splash Inn, which is really cool. I've never seen a BH-18 on floats. And, it just, there's something about that too. You know, it's radial engine that just, you know, the whine off it. It's just fantastic. And then you put 50 lights on the damn thing and you've got, you know, it flying through the air. It's, It's such a cool show.
Was that Mark Bakers that was there, the AOPA president? Was it all polished aluminum?
The float?
Yeah, the Beach 18 on floats.
It was polished aluminum.
I bet you money that was Mark Bakers. He's the AOPA president. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So he was doing bombing runs with.
There's some good videos of him flying that plane, by the way.
Huh. That's cool.
Have you ever seen the one and only? It's not flying anymore, but somebody put a DC-3 on floats.
Yeah,
yeah, I saw the video of that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's the biggest plane on floats on. Yeah, floats, not the biggest float plane per se, because obviously it's Spruce Goose. Goose.
Well, but, and Antonov made a monster one.
Oh my gosh! Oh, okay.
It couldn't fly out of ground effect.
Yeah, I think I've seen that video.
I think it had four engines per side, or it was a lot.
Wow.
Is that when they started? Is that before they came up with the idea, or is that how they maybe came up of the idea of the Ukraina plane or something? You know how those planes that just fly in ground effect over water?
Yeah, that was their penultimate implementation of that technology.
Yeah. Seems extremely inefficient, especially for a jet engine powered aircraft.
Yeah, there were some technical hurdles that they weren't able to overcome.
To be literally at sea level, the worst altitude ever for a jet engine.
Yeah. Anyway, not to pull us too far off track.
Sorry, John. Yes.
No. It's,
carry on.
I'm trying to think of what else to say. You know, I do want to say. One thing is I was ready to go with the third daily. I had the recorder out, and I was all ready for it. And I went to talk to somebody, and when I was about to do it, I got pulled over into conversation about some video stuff. And then next thing I know, everybody's gone, and I was like, well, so much for that. So I was ready to do the third one and to talk to everybody at the campground like I'd been promising. Because there's a whole bunch of people there, but by the time I got done with the conversation I was in, everybody was gone, and I was like, well, that ain't going to happen, and it was my last night there, so.
So how many days were you there altogether?
Apologies there. Four show days, but I was there for 6 days, really. I came in early Sunday, and Sunday and Monday were a lot of prep and kind of getting stuff ready, getting the video stuff ready, hanging out. Just, you know, you always have that day of just, hey, I get to see everybody right now, you know. And then I left very, very early on Saturday morning. So I think I left the campground around 6:30 because I missed the balloon launch too, which I was kind of bummed about. But I had a 9:10 flight that I had to catch out of Orlando, so.
Oh, I was going to ask if you drove this one, but you flew it, huh?
No, I flew it. I flew it. I'm hoping it's the last one I fly commercially, or drive, for that matter.
Yeah.
You're going to take the bus from now on?
No, I'm really, really hoping.
Use your Uber app.
No. I'm really hoping next year to fly it myself.
Yeah.
I'll get to that in a second, but... I'm trying to think of what else happened. Something I found that was pretty cool. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff going on. ForeFlight announcing their new app, which just apparently dropped today, as we record this on the 10th, I believe. Open Airplane, they had a big announcement the week as well, that if you own a plane, you can now rent that plane out without any, you know, as long as you're in a compatible insurance. Plan with, I believe, Star Aviation is the one that offers it right now. You can rent that plane back into the Open Airplane network to anybody who has a Universal Pilot Checkout in the network.
For that sort of plane. Cool.
For that sort of plane, which is huge.
Interesting.
Because all of a sudden now you have the ability to have a whole lot more airplanes in the...
Commercial insurance, though, is quite spendy.
But you don't need the commercial insurance.
So through Star Aviation, or what is that? What is Star Aviation?
Yeah, I think it's Star.
So they have a plan that you can be on that's
It's like your regular plan for just you,
mm-hmm.
but it opens it up to anybody because they have the UPC in the network.
Okay. And they don't have to, you don't have to 100-hour inspections or anything goofy like that.
That is where I don't know, and that is the one question I still have, is the 100-hour. Because technically you're renting it at that point, so...
No, you're... Well, the 100-hour inspection is only required for rental aircraft that are used for training.
Oh, so then you might not have to, because you're not renting it for training, because you have to be a private pilot or higher to rent from the Open Airplane Network.
Right, and you have to have your checkout already.
Yeah.
So you're just couldn't, renting it for to example, use it. Do a BFR in it. Well...
No, I don't think you could. I think you'd have to do it in a regular... Yeah. But I don't think you would necessarily book your BFR through Open Airplane. I'm not sure you can do that and book the instructor at the same time. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So you kind of have to coordinate that with the school at that point. So...
Well, that review check ride that they have in order just to be qualified through Open Airplane, is that annually or
yes.
biannually?
It's annually.
Okay. So you have to do it annually, but it counts as your BFR.
Yes.
Well, yeah, because now you're doing it twice as often.
Well, and it's more regular than the BFR, but...
Right, right.
But by doing that, what you're doing is you're able to rent any airplane in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
that is in that type.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, it's definitely something to think about it when you're thinking about, hey, I'm going to go on vacation to here, wherever that may be. Hey, is there a qualified AOP or Open Airplane place nearby that I might be able to grab a plane?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And you know what? If you
it'd
look
be
at
worth
the...
going to get checked out in so you could do that, yeah.
And if you look at the map now, there is a ton of operators that are on board.
Yeah,
and, you know, they keep adding 40
them. Something. Aren't they at 40-something now?
They might be more than that now. And, you know, I keep seeing every other day, I see another operator come on board.
Yeah, they're killing it.
And now that you've got private owners who are able to rent their airplanes out, you know, they can get some kickback on their airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And then without a lot of the extra costs that you used to have to go through. And, you know, Open Airplane can now expand their network to all of these, you know, private planes around the country. So... It's a huge deal. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, they're really knocking it out of the park. I figured this was going to do pretty good, but they've exceeded the expectations that I had on it.
Yeah. So, I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, what else is going to come out of that. So, you know, that was one of the big things this week, that I saw announced that, Fourth Flight, there was an announcement, I think the FAA announced that they were working on some medical stuff, and I know the UCAP guys already talked about that. But
they've made a change to that sleep apnea deal.
Yeah, they did do that too. Sun of Fun's always interesting because, you know, being the start of the year, this is kind of where everybody kind of announces all their starting stuff. So you see a lot of new tech come out. You see a lot of announcements for the year and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you're going to see a lot at Oshkosh, but, you know, this is kind of the beginning of the year. So everybody's kind of been huddled up through the winter, you know, working like crazy to get stuff out. And then here's where they finally get to come public with it. So it's always, you know, interesting to see that. Overall, I think it was a, you know, really good show. It's interesting because, it starts on a Tuesday. So, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, and even a little bit of Thursday is usually a little, you know, a lot less crowded. There's not, mm-hmm. There's a lot of people there, but there's not a whole lot. And then Friday, I mean, it's just like Friday afternoon, you know, everybody gets off work, you know, and people start coming in. And it's amazing how much more people show up on Friday afternoon. Just watching the air show, you know, it was just significantly more crowded.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a neat show. It's my second year down there. It's a different air show. It's definitely smaller. It's definitely a little more, I don't know, personal. It's not as crazy, hectic, and busy. It's a lot of fun. And, I went down there and it was kind of cold up here, and then I came back and it was a little more warm up here, and I got to enjoy the 70, 80 degree weather while I was down there. So, you know, I can't complain. It was kind of I got spring a week early. So,
Not all bad.
Not all bad. So, you know, I wanted to ask really what you guys thought of the show from, you know, kind of the other side of the internet, not being able to attend. You know, what did you guys see come out of the show on online or through talking to people or through the Not at Son of Fun podcast, which I know, Brad, I knew you were part of that. So I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on the show.
Well, for me, I'm going to have to say that I missed the majority of it. I've been pretty busy at work. We're starting another campus, so it opens this weekend, and so I've been like absorbed in that for the last month. And so after this weekend and after Easter weekend, then I'll have some more time, some free time. But yeah, this last few weeks have been just monstrous for me. So, Brad, how about you?
I was jealous of all the people who got to be there. I found myself wishing I was there. I was on the road for part of it on my extended trip this last week. So it was very tempting when I was informed or when I figured out that I was going to need to divert. It was kind of tempting to divert to Lakeland. But that was a bit out of the way from the basically due north line that goes between Hot Springs, Arkansas, and Crystal, Minnesota.
Yeah,
I think that would have added about another 1,000+ miles to my trip.
So here in the Mooney, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah,
get to Lakeland. I can get to Lakeland, Florida, from Minneapolis in 7.5 hours, something like that.
Yeah, I don't see what the problem is. You should have, you know, there was camping for you.
Yeah, we didn't quite have enough gear.
You could have found it.
No, that's true.
There's plenty of people there.
Was the Tajma tent there?
No. No.
No, so, I mean, it sounded like it was a great time, and I do want to get down there. One of my pilot buddies is always talking about flying down there, and that would be a fun trip to make, just to get down there and get the heck out of here. Like I said, you know, it's still what most people would consider winter up here. We still have a little bit of snow left on the ground, despite 3 days in a row of temperatures in the 50s and 60s. So, yeah, and snow is not remotely out of the question for us for about another month and a half.
I mean, there's a reason they call it spring break for pilots, so.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the big draw, with, you know, because everybody wants to get out of Minnesota about this time of year.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, cool. Well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the Son of Fun talk here. You know, kind of, I know it's early, but, you know, shout out to Son of Fun Radio for their 20th anniversary this year, too. They had a little party, kind of celebrating that on, I want to say Thursday. So.
I saw they got a new deck built.
Yeah, the deck was fantastic. I mean, it's huge. And so they had a party on the back deck. And, you know, it looks great. They, you know, Dave Shellbetter has done, you know, a hell of a job down there. And, you know, them celebrating 20 years, getting this deck, you know, and really kind of getting recognized by Son of Fun finally is, you know, it's been good. So, you know, huge congrats to them for that.
Yeah, they really make a big contribution to that, to bringing that air show to everyone else, right, through Live ATC is broadcasting Son of Fun Radio. And it really, I think, helps a lot of people figure out that, hey, you know what? I really got to go there next year.
Well, I mean, it was, a couple years ago, you know, Mike Daniels and his wife were listening to Son and Fun Radio online, and then all of a sudden they were like, we got to go, and they booked, you know, a red-eye flight to Son and Fun from Vegas. So,
yeah,
you know, it's that kind of thing. It's yeah, they do a really good job of bringing the show to everybody, and, you know, I really love what they do, and then what Dave Pasco is able to do to stream it online so that people at home can really enjoy the show and, you know, make them jealous that they're not there.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yep. So Brad, you kind of mentioned it a little bit, but you know, seems like you had quite the trip.
Yeah, I had a real nice trip again, just getting out of here down to visit my folks who've retired down in Arkansas near Hot Springs. And you know, like I said, when we left, there was probably 15 inches of snow on the ground. And it had actually kind of rained / sleeted the night before we left. Mm-hmm. And then, so that morning there was, you know, the slush, fortunately the slush had frozen. So we didn't have to deal with slush on the gear and all, and that kind of mess. But,
that so mean there was ice everywhere?
Yeah. Everything had a layer of half an inch of ice on it.
Oh, nice.
But it was, I mean, I don't know, we're all used to it up here. We know how to deal with it. And so it really wasn't a problem. But I finished my checkout for the Mooney, which made the whole trip possible in the first place. And I worked really, really hard on the planning for the trip. I was surprised when I started checking out the Mooney and thinking about, you know, not getting a checkout, completing a checkout in it, but using it as a traveling machine. You know, you pop open, there's a door in the back by the on the left rear side. It's not down low like it is on a Cherokee, it's up high. Mm-hmm. It's on the top quarter of the fuselage towards the trailing edge of the wing.
You gotta lift your bags up and over to get it in a moment.
Yeah,
huh?
And it's tiny. Mm-hmm. Okay, it is absolutely tiny. Like flying the Arrow, I could take, you know, two full sets of golf clubs and suitcase and all kinds of stuff, and no problem. I can pack it in the back of the Arrow. I could bring Aiden's golf clubs, and he's eight, right? So the, you know, really short bag. I could fit those in that luggage area. That was it. There's no way you can fit anything else in there. And it was basically, the entire thing was basically full with luggage for the three of us, golf clubs, and really nothing else. I shouldn't say nothing else. We had a toolbox with, you know, some oil, extra oil, and a few simple tools, and the stuff that you need for sumping the fuel. You need to sump the fuel into basically a large bucket, because there's a gascalator drain on the bottom of the plane that mm-hmm. you put the bucket on the outside and you go inside and you pull the pin. Anyway, so there was not a lot of space in there to begin with, and you know, with an 8 year old and a 140 pound 16 year old and bags and me, we were 60 pounds under max gross takeoff weight with full fuel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was a lot of just nitpicky planning stuff to take care of what can we take, what can't we take, where are we for weight, you know, how is all of this going to fit, how is this all going to work. And then there was the weather. I kind of had to pick the day that I was going to go based on what weather systems were going to be moving through along the 650 miles route of flight. And so I was able to work out a day that was okay, but then it became obvious on the Friday that we left, that two Fridays ago, that we were going to have to go straight through or we were not going to get there before dark. And we were leaving at 8 o'clock in the morning, and if we stopped for a layover on the way down, we weren't going to make it in. There were going to be thunderstorms that were going to keep us. We basically would have had to overnight somewhere in Missouri because of the storms. So we did. We went straight through, and you know, things were pretty uneventful. Filed IFR, launched out of Crystal. You know, ended up over an endless undercast that stretched from, I don't know, it stretched for 350 miles in every direction.
Wow.
We're motoring along and you can't see anything but clouds underneath you. We were a couple thousand feet above, but still it was just nothingness, you know, just staring at nothing. for the bulk of the trip. And as we were motoring along, I decide, well, let's find out what's going on in Hot Springs, and I'll pull up en route flight advisory, call up flight service, and see what's going on. And so I call them up and say, hey, you know, I'm here and I'm traveling to Hot Springs and I'm just wondering if there's any weather along my route of flight. And they're like, well, you know, it looks pretty good. Hot Springs is showing 200-foot overcast and 5 miles of visibility. Like, oh.
And that's pretty good?
Like, that's the absolute minimum that I can shoot an approach to, and I'm nowhere near comfortable shooting an approach to 200 feet. Even a coupled approach, I really don't want to shoot to 200 feet, because you break out and you've got 25 seconds to land the plane.
Yeah. In a plane that you just got checked out in.
In a plane I just got checked out in. Now, granted, it has a two-axis autopilot, which would be a huge help in shooting that approach down. And I'm fresh on it. I know I've flown coupled approaches on it with the glide slope, and so I know how the whole thing works and all that, but really don't want to do that. So I'm starting to pick out plan B, you know, and turns out that a guy takes off out of Springfield in a Seneca in front of me, and he's going to Hot Springs. So we're going in the same exact direction, talking to the same controller. And at one point I just said, hey, can you just let me know if that guy makes it or not? He's like, well, he's only 7 miles ahead of you. It's like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, well, anyway.
You'll both know at the same time.
So, I'm getting down there, and I'm getting nervous, and we cross into Arkansas and get handed off to the final Memphis Center controller that's going to bring us the last couple hundred miles in. And there's all this vertical development of clouds in front of me. You know, all of a sudden, as we get closer to Hot Springs, there's clouds are just starting to go up. And I'm like, oh, this is not what I want. You know, I'm going to have sick kids, which turns out I did have one sick kid in the plane. And I'm going to be, you know, slamming into what I'm assuming is going to be really bad turbulence inside of these clouds. So we're getting closer and I'm pulling the power back and trying to slow down the Mooney, which is not very fun. It just does not.
It's a sports car of a plane.
It's a sports car. Yeah, it is. So when you know when you level off at cruise and you start to trim it out, you're at about 120 knots, and it takes about a minute to get up to 160, and it takes that long to slow it back down again. You know, you pull the power out and you just wait, and very slowly the speed, you know, airspeed needle starts to move down, and I'm getting closer to this vertical wall of clouds that's extending up to 12,000 feet and climbing. And I'm going, oh, this is really not going to be very much fun, you know, and I'm getting taking the autopilot out so I can just fly it by hand, and, you know, so I'm getting ready for badness, right? And nothing. We fly into the clouds, and there's no turbulence at all. I'm like, ugh.
Wow.
It stinks to be a low-time pilot. they just don't know what to expect, right? And then we burst out the other side of it, and there's sort of broken building clouds that are coming. And these lifting clouds were enough to lift the low overcast up off of Hot Springs. And so by the time they routed me, everybody was trying to get in right now because there was 45 minutes away were more thunderstorms that were expected to come through. So we had to go 25, 30 miles on the downwind before we could turn in on the localizer and get established and fly the ILS back to the airport. And I'm listening to people, and the center controller is asking them to report where they break out, and they're like, oh, I broke out at 1,700 feet, or I broke out at 2,000 feet, and the weather's just coming up and up and up, and so I'm very happy at this point. I'm like, okay, good. I don't have to, you know, I filed an extra alternate just in case that I wasn't going to get in there. My fuel was starting to get lower than I was really comfortable getting. I really, really wanted to just get on the ground, and the weather gods smiled upon me, and we made it in without any additional drama. You know, tied the plane down, arranged for fuel, and we're very happy to be in 65-degree humid air. Like, that was just so nice to be able to be outside in air that didn't hurt when you breathe it because it's so dry. So we had a great time when we were there, and then we, you know, it started to get to be time to come back, and I'm looking at the weather and I'm going, well, I was planning on leaving on Wednesday, 8 days ago from when we're recording, and I'm looking at the weather and I'm like, I don't think that we're going to be able to make it across Missouri on Wednesday because of thunderstorms that are going to be coming through. And Thursday, it's going to snow in Minnesota, and Friday, it's going to snow in Minnesota, and we're not going to make it back till Saturday if I, you know, if I end up delaying. This is really going to not be fun. We're going to be in some hotel in some podunk little town in the middle of nowhere, Missouri, for 3 days, waiting for the weather to come back up.
Lakeland, Florida. Be real.
Yeah, exactly. It could easily outrace the thunderstorms. They're all going to the east. So we decide to leave Tuesday, and I'm sweating the weather. I'm really worried about it, and I'm looking at, you know, the Prog charts and the Outlook forecast and the area forecast, and you know, what's the weather going to be like? I planned a layover in Sullivan, Missouri. There's, you know, place to eat, car. I arranged for a crew car. There's caverns and caves nearby that you can tour, and I'm getting all this stuff set up, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, this is a solid make. I've got this easy. The only question is, will thunderstorms arrive while we're there? If they do, they should pass in 2 hours. We'll wait them out and then fly the rest of the way back to Minnesota. It'll be just no problem. And then we launch out of, you know, I pick up my clearance. We launch out of Hot Springs. Get handed off to the next sector controller at Memphis Center, and we hear Mooney 11 Juliet, 111 Juliet Papa, Memphis Center. And I'm like, okay, Memphis Center, Mooney 111 Juliet Papa, go ahead. I said, 111 Juliet Papa, do you have a storm scope on your aircraft? Affirmative. well, they're showing thunderstorms about 150 miles of your position and along your route of flight, and we're showing a forecast for extreme rain.
Oh man.
Like, I'm over the tops at this point, you know, and it was really bumpy in the clouds climbing out. It was not very much fun. So we're over the tops, it's nice and smooth, and I can see for what feels like 200 miles, and there's nothing visible out there, but now they're telling me, you've got a problem. Like, yeah. Okay, all right, now I've got to start working the system and figuring out what I can do and what my options are. And so I'm like, well, all right, can I get, if I vector a little bit to the west and go up the western edge of Missouri instead of the eastern edge of Missouri, you know, can I get there? And they're like, well, I can't really tell you. We don't have NEXRAD radar at center, but Springfield is over that way. I'll vector you towards this VOR. That should keep you out of the weather, and Springfield Approach has better radar than we do, and they can probably help you out. Okay, so we go 80 miles to the northwest and pick up Springfield Approach, and I start, and they're like, okay, so what do you want to do? Like, I don't want to go into a thunderstorm, so let's talk about this. You know, can I go, and I start picking out airports that I'm like, can I go north? Can I just kind of go north from here? He's like, sure, I'll give you a vector, and he gives me a vector. I'm like, all right, it said that should keep you out of the way, and you should be okay, and I'm seeing the clouds starting to lift in front of me again, and they're really building. I mean, off to the west, they're going up past 25, 30,000 feet and just climbing and climbing and climbing. And I'm watching this happen in real time. And I'm starting to chicken out. You know, the clouds in front of me are coming up over 10,000 feet, and I'm at 9,000 feet, and I'm kind of going, okay, I really don't want to be here. And so I chicken out. I just said, there's an airport. It's right in front of me. You know, alter my. I request a clearance to land at this airport, and he's like, "You're set. Fine. You're cleared to land at that airport. You know, fly this heading. Descend to 3,000. I'm at 9,000 feet, and the airport is like 7 miles ahead of me. I'm like, I can't see how this is going to work. Pull the power back. Slow the plane down. You know, actually put the plane into a climb to get it to slow down faster, throw the gear out, you know, throw the flaps out, point it at the ground, and, you know, just keep it under VLE, right? So I don't rip the gear or anything off of the gear. And I'm descending and descending and descending, and he's like, okay, the airport's 3 miles at your 12 o'clock position. I'm like, dude, I'm in the clouds, and I'm at 6,000 feet.
Oh.
So I'm just like, well, we'll see how this works out. You know, I'm trying to pick up the weather. I'm trying to fly the airplane. I'm in the clouds. I've got a million things going on, and, you know, I'm just trying to monitor everything and keep track of what's going on. And I break out at about 4,500 feet, and it's clear for a million miles. I can see lots of bad dark rain off to one side and lots of dark rain off to the other side, and ahead of me it's clear. And
perfect.
And then I pick up the airport, and it's like, well, there's no way I'm gonna be able to land from here anyway. I'm 3/4 of a mile above the airport, and I'm almost over the threshold. So, like, he's like, okay, well, radar contact lost. You know, I said, well, okay, cancel IFR. And he's like, yeah, call me when you're ready to keep going. And so I'm motoring along, and I just decided, forget it. I can see. The bases are way high, so I've got really great visibility. The air is still. I'm just going to keep going. And so, you know, I squawk VFR, and I just keep motoring along north, and I had to steer around some showers and stuff like that, and every once in a while, ForeFlight would pick up the, would give me a little bit of a picture of what the radar looked like, and the storm scope I had on, and it was showing lightning, but the lightning was 50, 60 miles on either side of me. Gradually, it got to within probably 35 miles on either side of me, but I was still able to, you know, stay. The 20 miles from thunderstorms is kind of as close as I'm willing to get. Mm-hmm. And I was able to keep that distance away, and was able to, you know, they were right. You know, I could go north, and I was going to make it out, and sure enough, I did. I got myself probably 70 miles north of those cells, which had some pretty strong-looking stuff in them that I could see from underneath, but it was a long ways away from me. Picked an airport that had yellow near it, meaning that there was a town nearby that hopefully I could, like, walk to get food. And flew in and landed. It turned out this really nice airport, Macon-Fowler Regional in northern Missouri, and had a brand new...
It must be near Macon, Missouri, I guess.
I guess, yeah, it is. It's right next to... It's just south of Macon.
I know where that is. I'm actually from that, or not that area, but I'm from Northwest Missouri.
Well, they have a beautiful, brand new 4,500-foot concrete runway. They have cheap gas. They have a crew car and really nice people that are there. And they're like, hey, here's the restaurant that you guys want to go to. It's got great food. People fly in from 1,000 miles around to go to AJ's restaurant and, you know, go up there and they'll take good care of you. And, you know, and sure enough, everything, it was great. You know, the weather was all to our south. We had a great meal. We got back in the plane. We motored the rest of the way home. With minimal drama, we actually, the only turbulence that we really encountered on the rest of the flight was crossing a cold front over in the middle of Iowa. We crossed underneath of it, but we got really beat up pretty well. You know, once again, I'm slowing the plane down to VA and trying to just get through this thing. Had to fly VFR over the top of another overcast on the way, probably 50 miles south of the cities. Got denied the Class Bravo transition again by Minneapolis approach. So now I'm trying to, like, sandwich the plane above the overcast and below the Class Bravo so that I can, you know, penetrate down below the overcast without breaking cloud clearance or getting into known icing and make it the last 15 miles to the airport. It was a little bit more stressful than I'd have cared for. I really wish that they would occasionally grant Bravo transitions, but they just don't do that. and then we made it the rest of the way in, put the plane away, and we were all happy, except for the fact that it was cold and it was going to snow. But we survived. And I was able to... This is the first time I've had to do a major divert due to weather. I mean, we were hundreds of miles from where I was originally planning to go. and I was able to work the system and work with ATC. They took really good care of me. They kept me away from all of the bad stuff and really slid me right through really the one area that I could have gone through to get to where I was going. So they, you know, they took really good care of me. They vectored me the right way. I worked with En Route Flight Advisory Service, and kept enough options open and was flexible enough to say, you know, even as we were, as I was approaching the cells and I was about to do that dive, I'm like, you know, I can always turn around. I know that I've got a solid out behind me and I can get to some other airport and get the plane on the ground and just, you know, and just wait this out, you know, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. I can get a better picture of what the weather looks like. I can just wait for this all to go away. And if we get there a day late, if we get there 4 days late, we get there 4 days late, but we're going to be in one piece. And
no get there itis for you.
No, that was the very first thing I threw out the window was any notion of schedule. Like, we're going to get there when we get there, and if we're late, we're late. But I am not going to take this plane full of my family and fly it into a dangerous situation and expose us to any kind of risk at all. Mm-hmm. And I just kept that in the front of my mind of I was always ready to pull the trigger and just abandon the trip and just say, forget it, we're gonna just put the plane on the ground and walk away. And we'll be all right. Mm-hmm. Things will work themselves out, you know. That, and everybody was pretty copacetic with that. You know, it worked out really well. I learned a ton. I learned how to work with ATC. I learned a lot about no matter how much you study the weather, it's going to do what it's going to do. And so have plan B, C, D, and E in your pocket and ready to go. I was really glad that I did a lot of training. I did 5 approaches 2 days before we left. So I really knew all the equipment in the plane. I knew how to fly coupled approaches. I knew how to fly coupled GPS, LNAV, VNAV approaches. I knew everything that I needed to know. I was really confident that, you know, yes, I know how to make the plane do this because I just did it 2 days ago. And so that was great. You know, carrying lots of fuel and not really pushing it on the fuel side, I could have probably squeezed an extra 5 or 6 gallons into the plane before I left on the way down. Mm-hmm. And I was wishing that I had called the fuel truck, even though it was like 6 gallons, because I really would have liked to have the extra 6 gallons in the plane. It would have just made that last stretch of the flight on the way down a lot less stressful. On the way back, you know, with a layover and picking up extra fuel, I landed in Minnesota with 3.5 hours where the fuel is still in the tanks. And that was a great feeling too. If I can't get into Minnesota, to Minneapolis, I can fly to 3 other states and I've got no problem. So, it was nice. You know, the plane is a wonderfully equipped plane for that kind of flying. The only critiques I have of a Mooney is there's not a lot of room inside in terms of volume or weight, and I just am not willing to put that plane into any sort of icing conditions at all. I wouldn't dive through a 500-foot overcast layer unless I had 2,000 feet of room underneath it. Mm-hmm. That plane and ice just spooks me a lot. So, really, really thin wings and really, you know, all the things that make that plane fast make it pick up ice and fall out of the sky. Mm. It was a great experience. It was educational. It was fun. I had a great time doing the flights. The kids slept most of the way because I climbed really high. And that's a great way to put the kids to sleep.
I'll have to remember that.
Yeah, you go up to like 15,000 for a half an hour, and then you come back down?
I didn't go quite that high, but at, you know, 9,000 feet, and it's lights out.
Yeah.
They're done. Yeah, they're just, and no big deal. So, I really enjoyed it. I like doing those long trips. I like having the ability in terms of the equipment and the ratings and the experience to be able to make that work. It was, I just love it.
Yeah, you're really making me really want to get the airplane and start, you know, taking it on some trips, places. Yeah. And to really, you know, once I get the airplane, you know, my next thing is let's save up and get the IFR so I can really do this.
The IFR, I wouldn't have been able to do this at all without the IFR. I wouldn't have been able to get in at either end.
You could have. It just might have taken, you know, 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And I get paid by the hour, so when I'm sitting on the ground, I'm not billing.
So way to use a GA airplane for its intended purpose.
Yeah, like I said, that machine is just really decked out so well for doing traveling, and it really was just a joy to fly it. You guys got to do that now. It's your turn.
I know. I want to. So I had a question. You mentioned the Storm Scope, and you said it has one. I haven't actually come in contact with one of those. So I'm kind of curious as to what it does and what the interface to it is and that kind of stuff.
So a Storm Scope is a dead simple piece of equipment that fits in a standard 4-inch hole in the panel. It's just got a big grid laid out on it. You can set the range. The one that I have in the Mooney goes from the biggest range is 100 miles, and you can go to 50 miles or you can go to 25 miles. And the airplane is depicted by a crosshair in the dead center. And then it's a big LCD display, just a black and white liquid crystal display. Anywhere that there's lightning, there will be a little X relative to the range you have set on it and the position of the plane. So if there's lightning in front of you, there'll be a little X in front of you. And that's all it does, is it's simply a lightning detector.
Okay.
You stay away from lightning. Again, not for the lightning. The plane can handle getting hit by lightning. You know, it'll definitely leave a mark, but it won't fall out of the sky. But it's the turbulence that makes the lightning happen in the first place that the plane can't handle so well.
Yeah.
I follow the FAA rules. I won't or guidelines, I should say. I won't get within 20 miles of a thunderstorm. And you know, it was really nice to be able to look at this thing and go and zoom in to the point where it's like, okay, that lightning is 35 miles away from me. Okay, good. You know, and I'm moving away from it in a hurry. It's not getting closer to me. I'm moving away from the cell.
Yeah.
Was just a wonderful piece of equipment to have in the plane. It's different from what you would get with ADS-B weather because it is up to the second. Right, the instant the lightning strike hits, there's a little X on the display, and you know, with ADS-B, you're looking at up to 11 minutes of latency between when the lightning strike happens and when the lightning bolt shows up on your iPad or whatever your EFB is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Well, yep. Also sounded like you. Learn more about what your personal minimums are.
Yeah, you know, I've set personal minimums for myself. When I got the instrument rating, I started out at about 1,000-foot ceilings were about as low as I wanted to go. And I've gradually lowered them, but there's stuff that I just won't push at this point in my flying career.
Right.
And given the amount of flying that I'm doing, you know, it's going to be a while before those minimums really get much lower than they are. Crosswind landings, I'm not terribly afraid of within kind of reasonable limits. But shooting approaches way down low, you know, even in a plane with a coupled autopilot and all of that nifty stuff, I would really rather have a little bit more time for between when I break out and when I have to put the wheels on the pavement.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Fantastic. That sounds like a lot of fun. And how many hours did you get total for the whole trip?
I logged 10 hours round trip.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's not far from the distance you traveled.
No, it was 1,350 miles, I think, total. So
that is a fast airplane.
Yeah. I mean, it trues out, when you're above 5, 6,000 feet, it trues out right at 160 knots.
Nice.
Nice.
And it's 11, I was getting 11.2 gallons per hour.
That's not bad at all.
That's the best part about that plane.
I mean, considering, you know, 9, 10 gallons an hour and a 172 to get 105.
I mean, you're doing 175 miles an hour and getting like 18 miles, 19 miles per gallon.
Yeah.
Right. No, I was watching the JPI, the engine monitor.
Yeah.
And it will tell you what your MPG is.
Oh, nice.
And so I was pulling about 15.5 miles per gallon.
Oh, okay, cool.
But at a ridiculous speed.
Yeah.
We were fighting a little bit of a headwind both ways, but not too bad.
Try that, Porsche.
Yeah. Well, and try doing that without getting the ticket, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's the hard part with the car.
Absolutely.
And there's mountain ranges in between there that it's a lot easier to deal with in the Mooney than it is in a car.
Yeah. Well, cool. Fantastic job of a long cross country with the family and the whole bit. I mean, that's what it's all about, man. You get your ticket and everything. And you're like, this is what I want to do. And sometimes it takes a long time for you to ever realize that ability to do that. But sounds like something that every one of us should go try and do at some point.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. You know, just get a flexible time and go. You know, and you'll make it there eventually, and you'll have a good time along the way. And I was really pleasantly surprised. You know, we stopped off at this little airport that was, you know, this tiny little spot that, like I said, I was looking for yellow by the airport on the chart, on the VFR chart, and cheap gas. And I got just really nice people that were really looking to help us out, and you know, helped move the plane over to get it fueled up, and we had recommendations, and here's the crew car, and you know, just you know, everything that we could have asked for. And that's something, that's an experience that's a lot harder to get on the road.
Yeah, that's for sure. So poor Aiden still got a little bit sick on the way, or is...
Yeah, I think, I can't remember, I lost count of how many times he threw up on the way down.
Aww.
And there was no turbulence on the way down. I mean, none. It was smoother than the smoothest freeway.
Hey, man, and, bro, what, you know, wait, as much as he's flown with you, way to be a little trooper about it. And he's not like, I ain't going ever again, you know?
No, he's remarkably calm about it now. He just kind of throws up and ties off the bag and, you know, he kind of goes about his business.
Yeah.
And yet, on the way back, when we were getting our butts kicked, he had no problem.
Huh.
So, I don't know what it is.
At least it wasn't a flight back.
Hey.
Right. He didn't throw up in my flight bag.
Yeah.
He did sneeze one time when he was throwing up, and that was a bit messy. But again, he was okay with it. You know, we got to Arkansas and got out of the plane, and he went and changed, and then it was all better. It was all better from there on out.
Maybe a trooper.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, but he did say, I think I'm done with flying until Oshkosh.
Oh, okay.
All right, that's all right.
Hey, at least he's gonna go to Oshkosh with you.
Yeah, no, he's looking forward to it. He's like, when are we going to Oshkosh? And so,
yeah, how long are you going to be there?
I think we'll probably do the second half, you know, like Wednesday to Sunday or Thursday to Sunday.
Okay.
Something like that. So I think I've got the plane reserved Wednesday to Sunday.
Cool.
Yeah. How about yourselves? When are you guys going to be there?
Chris, let you go first.
Chances are I probably won't make it at all this year.
What?
Something would have to really work out to where I made it there.
Yeah, you
that's
make
not
it work
acceptable.
Out.
Yeah, yeah, it's it's going to be really iffy. Two things is, number one, you know, we're doing the Alaska cruise, and that is just absorbing a lot of my vacation time. Then in July, the July 4th weekend, we're going back to Missouri to see some family. So that's going to absorb the majority of the rest of my vacation time, not leaving me with hardly anything left. And then on top of that, we're opening up our sixth campus in August. So I'll be so busy at the end of July and beginning of August that chances are I won't have the time to do it, even if I had the time vacation-wise. So it's just kind of bad timing. So probably I'll miss it, but not that I want to. It's just the way the cards lie sometimes.
Well, if that's the case, then we better get Mark out there.
Dang straight.
I will be there. Let me think about this. I believe, as it stands right now, probably yet again gonna leave to head up there Saturday morning. Probably, which means that we'll probably get up there sometime in the evening, on Saturday, and then we'll be staying till probably Sunday. Leave Sunday morning again. Not entirely sure about that yet. Still need to work out a few things, and there's also the possibility that I might be flying Damon from Baltimore when we get back up to Scranton. So I might fly, or might drive back to Maryland and then fly up to Scranton. So still a lot in the works there, but it's looking like probably same time as always for me, Saturday through Sunday morning. So I'll be there a week.
Cool.
Woo-hoo. I'll be one of the couple guys with blue shirts and flames on them.
Yeah, and who knows? I might be able to stretch out my trip a little bit. We'll see. It's
yeah, like a Sunday through Sunday.
We'll see.
Hey, I need somebody, or these dailies aren't going to get done.
Yeah, we've noticed that.
It's because I'm busy. These shows are a lot of work, but yeah. I love doing it.
Well, in other news,
because you're working on that other podcast. That's the problem.
Hey, these things happen.
When your services are needed, you get stretched a little thin.
I can't not be doing something. So,
so what about you, Chris? What are you doing?
Well, Windows XP's dead. Oh wait, wrong podcast.
No one cares. We're Mac guys here.
That's right.
Yay! IE6 is dead.
Yeah. Well, I've managed to get in a couple of flights since the last podcast. Ron Klutz, Captain Ron, made it out here from NorCal to take in some of our spring training baseball, and flew his own 172 out here. And he had along his nephew with him. And he emailed me ahead of time or tweeted me and asked me if I wanted to go up to Sedona for a breakfast flight. So I was like, sure, I haven't been there in a few weeks, so let's go. So what was funny is that in the meantime, Fred, a.k.a. Little Miss Sunshine, but it's S-U-N-S-H at the end, not Sunshine. Fred's also from NorCal, but he happened to be in, like, I think it was, like, Dallas at the time. And he's like, hey, you got room for one more? And so he ended up flying into Phoenix and then also taking the flight with us up to Sedona.
So you had four seats in a 172 filled?
Yes, sir. And you know... You know about how big Ron Klutz is. Ron's not a big guy, but he's not a small guy. And his nephew was a pretty good sized guy. Well, we only had 20 gallons of fuel on takeoff. And Ron said with that, plus what we figured we weighed, we were about 50 pounds under gross. Well, I doubt that after we threw in all the camera gear that we had and everything else, but... I don't know if you saw that picture of the windscreen with, like, the four GoPros on it and all the other cameras and stuff. It was a joke. We didn't really fly like that, by the way. It was just everybody had a camera or two at the same time. So
that sounds like an OPA episode.
It was hilarious. Ron had me fly left seat, and I took us up to Sedona. It was a nice flight up. I had a uneventful landing, and so the trip up was really good. Had our breakfast. We met up with Kyle Matthews, who flies out of Chandler. He flew up there with a couple of his friends. So we got on air-to-air frequency and talked with him on the way up, and then we landed just, I don't know, a couple of minutes behind him. Had our breakfast, and then on the way back, Fred took the controls, and I got in the back seat, and Fred flew us back. Now, Fred flies out of NorCal, and he flies like he does aerobatics, and he also does a lot of formation flying, like almost every weekend with his buddies. He's got a Grumman. And so he joined, Kyle took off, and then we joined up on his wing and did a lot of formation flying on the way home. And he was just explaining to us the ins and outs and the, you know, what your sight picture should look like and how to know when you're getting too fast, getting too slow, and how to transition from one side of the airplane to the other, you know, person's wing. So that was a lot of fun doing. So, I mean, we were within, like, I'd say 20 feet of each other's wings.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty tight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's amazing how much turbulence coming off the other plane that you pick up, even in smooth air. And it was funny, when we went underneath Kyle felt our air pressure bumping him around, which was really interesting.
That's neat.
So I've got a real good video of it. Ron gave me his GoPro videos, and Fred gave me his, and I had two video cameras in the plane. So there's video footage coming from four different angles, four different cameras up on my YouTube channel to go check out the flight up and back with the air-to-air footage that we got. So that was a lot of fun. And what else? Oh, last Saturday, this past weekend, I finally got down to Coolidge to one of their pancake breakfast fly-ins that they have the first Saturday of each month. So unfortunately, it's about up. I think May, the I think May is the last one for the year. I know it's not June, and I don't think it was this one. So I think there's one more to come. But usually I get to two or three of these. It's, you know, about 100 planes usually fly in and from all over the place. And it's like a little miniature air show. I've talked about it before. So I took a good friend of mine who I used to work with in the mortgage business for many years, and his son. And his son is just like an aviation nut, too. And he's only like 8, 9 years old. But like he loves to watch the Military Channel and Discovery Channel and anything, you know, he knows everything there is to know, it seems like, about military aviation. So they had a really good time. It was their first time in a small plane. So it was fun to give them their first ride in a GA aircraft. But it had been more than a year. Yeah, I think it had been more than a year since my last time down at Coolidge. And so I get on the radio and I listen to where everybody's landing at on runway 5. And so I get in my head that I'm going to be going overflying the airport and then doing a left downwind for runway 5, because they're doing left traffic for 5. And I'm that's just like stuck in my head. And what my problem was is I've got my designations wrong. And basically I was telling people, yeah, I'm getting ready to go overfly the airport. And I was like a mile out. I'm basically cutting through the middle of downwind for left traffic for runway 5. And I'm like, oh crap. And this is like the radio does not stop at this point, because there's just people everywhere flying into this place. So it's one of those things where you really, really, really got to be on your toes. And I wasn't. And I was like, oh crap. And then I did a mistake that I shouldn't have done. I should have just continued across the airport and then rejoined back for downwind, like going out of the airport area and then entering back in. But instead I just cut the power and yanked it over right and did a banking turn and entered left downwind. I ended up cutting off some airplanes. They were behind me, but I ended up cutting off, you know, about three or four airplanes that was already on downwind. And I felt really bad about that. I mean, we weren't in any danger, and they were better than a mile behind me. But I shouldn't have really done that. I should have just kept on my track because I could see what's already ahead of me making this, you know, diving right turn to join the traffic. I didn't have a good picture of what was back there. I know when I crossed it, I didn't see anything. But anyways, it's one of those things you learn from your mistakes, and I shouldn't have joined that traffic the way I did. But anyways, got it down in one piece. And what's funny is that we're sitting in line with our plates for breakfast, and Brent's like, "What are you thinking about?" I go, "That terrible job I did on entering the traffic pattern and, you know, cutting off those people and stuff. That was just horrible. I know I don't do that, you know." Yeah. So the guy in front of me was like, "Oh, were you one of the blah, blah, blahs?" And I was like, "No, I was a 172. And he was flying a Corvallis TT, one of the new ones.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Hard to get cut off in a 172 when you're in one of those.
Yeah, no kidding. He had a beautiful, it was a young guy too. I don't know what the deal is with him and this Corvallis TT, but it was a new one. Gorgeous plane, but it turned out that, you know, everything was safe and I wasn't close to anybody, but I just, you know, I felt bad afterwards and I learned something from it. So, you know, it's one of those things when you're not, when you get something like kind of stuck in your head, and even though it's wrong, you think it's right. And
right.
You just kind of plow through it. But
yeah. Yeah. Planned continuation bias.
There you go. So anyways, that was my last couple of flights. Had a good time. And just a quick update before we finish up on the Mooney and Franz. So last episode we talked about Franz went ahead and pulled the trigger and purchased the Mooney. He was going to have them do a bunch of work on it up there because it had kind of like a small laundry list of stuff to get done. And one of the things was that, remember that low compression on that cylinder? So he starts reading some more about this and about how, you know, planes, if they've been sitting for a while, that may happen. Go out and fly them, get everything loosened up, and then recheck it again. So he told his ferry pilot, he goes, "Hey, why don't you go take this thing, go run it for a few hours, go fly it around, have fun with it, and bring it back." And then they went and checked it again, and it was 74.
Wow. Well, that's a lot cheaper than a top overhaul.
Yeah. So the cylinders are all good and everything as far as that goes. So all the work that he needed done to it's already done, and so he should be heading up there to pick it up sometime next week, I assume. I wish I had the time off. I'd run up there with him and go get it, but again, just too busy.
Yeah, that would be a fun long cross-country.
Yeah, it would. Mm-hmm.
Terrain in the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what the new 4 flight's for.
Yeah.
I know, you're an Android guy.
Yeah.
We've been through this.
Yeah, I don't think that's changing anytime soon. Anywho, I think we're a little longer than we intended, so we should probably do some shout-outs and get out of here.
I think that's a good idea. I'll start off real quick with a couple shout-outs. You know, Mike and Elizabeth Daniels for, you know, kind of camping out and saving the spots for us at Sun and Fun. Huge shout out to Larry Overstreet. Just such an incredible guy. And he's just a real lover of aviation podcasts and media. And he just supports us so much. And just, you know, it's guys like him and the rest of our listeners that, you know, it's the reason why we keep doing this, because we just love, you know, hearing from you guys that you're getting something out of it. And yeah, huge shout out to him. Everybody else that I saw at Sun and Fun, you know, it's just it's great to hang out with all of my aviation friends. So those are pretty much my main shout-outs for this episode.
All right. I'll go next. I'll just have a quick shout-out for Fred and Ron and Kyle. Great to fly with you guys. That was a lot of fun. really look forward to someday making it up to Northern California and flying with Ron and Fred and doing some maybe a flight in the pits or something like that, or doing some more formation flying with you guys. So anyways, shout out to you guys.
And I would add a shout out to, FAA Aeronautical Charting. If you haven't looked at the latest batch of aeronautical charts on some electronic device like SkyVector or your tablet or whatnot, the latest batch are pure digital charts. The old charts, believe it or not, they actually would print them and scan them in, and that was the charts that you would get electronically. The new ones are just from the original digital masters, and they are much, much clearer, brighter, better contrast. So big shout out to FAA Charting for that. The new charts came into effect the day after I flew back from Hot Springs, so I didn't get to see them. Would have been really nice to have them because I was VFR for more than half the trip, but that's okay. I'm just glad they're there.
I second that. They're beautiful. I finally got to see them today. And on 4Flight, I mean, they just look fantastic on a Retina iPad. I love them.
Yeah, they're much higher contrast. They're beautiful. Shout out to Steve Tupper and Dave Schallbetter for organizing the Not at Sun and Fun 2014 radio show. Got to talk with Steve. Got to talk a little bit with Dave Allen, the Plane Crazy Down Under folks. All of us who were jealous to not be at Sun and Fun, and looking forward to seeing most of the guilty parties at Oshkosh in a few more months. Shout out to the Springfield Approach controllers who really gave me a ton of help and kept me out of the bad stuff and helped me to get home on time and in one piece. Really, really appreciated it. So shout outs to all of you folks, and we'll talk to you soon.
Fantastic. So I think that's going to be about it for this episode. Lots of stuff, and you know, it's a lot of flying too. You know, we with the new schedule, we don't get a whole lot of flying, and it was I think it was great to hear, especially Brad, your long flight, and you know. Chris, you got some in, so I can only hope that I actually have a flight next time.
Yay!
Which it looks like.
Yeah, you got to get up there.
I have a plane booked on the 19th of April.
Nice.
My diamond checkout, sadly, but nope, I got the 172 booked, so next episode, I'm ready.
Very good.
So to go ahead and wrap this up, let's go ahead and just let you know where you can find us on the internet if you want to talk to us. Give us a shout out. Let us know what you think of the show. So, Chris, I'll start with you.
Sure, you can shoot me an email at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com. You can find me on the Twitter machine at CHOLUBAZ. That's CHOLUBAZ. And the same goes for the YouTube channel. By the way, if you guys ever have any questions that you'd like us to answer or show ideas you'd like us to talk about, feel free to shoot us an email and give us some ideas.
Yeah, definitely. And Brad, when you're not dodging thunderstorms, where can we find you on the internet?
You can reach me at brad@inthepatternpodcast.com, on the Twitter machine at Brad Kane, and on Diaspora at bkane@diaspora.kane.com. And Kane is spelled Kilo Oscar Echo Hotel November, just like it sounds.
And when I'm not running around with 50 pounds worth of camera gear, you can find me at john@inthepatternpodcast.com, on Twitter, app.net, and pretty much anywhere else at Pilot Conway. I'm also on Facebook at John O. Conway IV. For the entire podcast, you can reach us all at podcast@inthepatternpodcast.com. Our website is inthepatternpodcast.com. We are on Twitter, and Google Plus is In The Pattern. Or you can give us a like on Facebook at facebook.com/inthepatternpodcast. If you'd like updates on new episodes, you can go to our homepage and join our mailing list. It's on the right side of the page. We won't use your information for anything other than new episode updates. So go ahead and sign up there. We'd love to hear suggestions, comments, and critiques. We just love getting feedback from you guys. So with that, let's go ahead and wrap up episode number 39 of the In The Pattern podcast. We'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, make left traffic. You're cleared for the option. Sorry, AOP, what am I doing? So this is what I get for doing this at 10 o'clock at night. you West Coaster-ish, mid, whatever. No.
It's like saying that you're right next to New Hampshire, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. What the hell, what was I just about to say? Oh,